Hello and welcome to the KBC Well Good podcast with me, Jerry Hussing. I'm a performance psychologist, passionate about helping people reconnect to the best version of themselves, helping them reawaken and ignite their inner passion and ability through the power of the mind. I've been lucky to work with some of the world's best athletes and business people, and can't wait to share the simple yet powerful tips proven to help you be at your best. I'm going to be joined by a number of guests in conversation to tease out those tips. I hope you enjoy it. Hi everyone, I'm excited to bring you today's episode, the first in the KBC Well Good podcast series. Today, I'm joined by Anthony Kelly, director and co-founder of Wellfest. We're going to be talking about goal setting and how we can look at how we structure goals to achieve what we've been putting off until now, because now is the time. Anthony, great to have you here.
Yeah, delighted to be here, Jerry. And I think this is a really, really great topic to start off these podcasts with. Thanks for having me.
I'm delighted. And as we go with the conversations, it'll be some questions from me and some questions from Anthony, and we'll see how it unfolds and how it relates to you. But as we start thinking about the goals you want to set, it's important to think about, are these goals actually your goals? And what is the key driver, the motivation for you to have these? Because we all take on goals, and very often they're goals that we think we should be doing, or they're goals that other people have told us are great goals. And we take on goals that really sometimes aren't ours, or we take on simply too many goals. And a number of weeks into that, we get bombarded and we get pulled back into our normal day life. So what we're going to try to do today is look at how we can effectively set goals precisely and effectively so that it's a longer lasting lifestyle change rather than a fad, or rather than something we do in the short term. So does that sound okay to you, Anthony?
Sounds great. Yeah, I think I definitely fall into the classic case of somebody who tries to set, you know, too many goals, or, you know, have that to-do list with like way too much on it, which is unrealistic. And then also, I think, as you touch on, Jerry, sometimes you can dig into goals and find out that they're not fundamentally what you want, and you need to kind of reassess them all the time. And are they helping you achieve your bigger goals in life? So I suppose, if you can maybe give us a bit of a background and your view on how we can kind of use goals to get more control in our lives and kind of achieve what we want to in the short term, but also in the longer term, which is the most important, right?
Mm, absolutely. So a starting point for me is always appetite for change. So it's, you know, what is it that you're really hungry to change? And I equate that with the why. So in goals, we have three circles. We have the what. What is the goal? What is the new behavior, the new action I'd like to impact? How do I achieve that? Simply, how do I build habits to make that a reality? But everything has to start with the why, which is the most important thing. So people sometimes say to me, Anthony, oh, I'd love to give up smoking. And they're kind of thinking they'd like to give up smoking, and it might be simply because none of their friends smoke anymore. Or so in a situation like that, you know, they have to have a real personal and passionate why. It has to be something that they can see the real impact in changing. So I might ask them, have they children? And they might say, oh, I have a daughter and she's 3 years old. So the question I'll ask them then is, would you like to be at your daughter's wedding? And suddenly we start a different conversation. And with some of the clients who want to give up smoking, I would get them to visualize their daughter's wedding day and visualize in detail her at the altar, the dress. And then as they start to focus in on the details of the wedding, I would get them to focus on her face. So now you're looking at your daughter's face, but there's an emptiness there, a sadness there. And then I'd slowly get them to visualize the wedding unfolding, their daughter walking down the aisle of the church after the ceremony with a look of emptiness, a look of sadness on her face. And then getting to the car at the door of the church, getting into the car drives out. The wedding receptionist to the right, but the car stops and goes in the opposite direction. And I ask them, why is the car going in the opposite direction? And there's a knowing silence. And I remind them, because that's where the graveyard is. And you know where they're going. They're going to visit your grave because you are not there. And the reason you're not there is because you smoked.
Mm-hmm.
And something goes off in their eyes. And suddenly what motivates them to make a change isn't the hate of smoking. it's the love of their daughter. It's the love of, I want to be there. That is too important not to. So when we look at change, there are only two human emotions in life, love and fear. If we act out of fear, it's stress-based, it's limbic-based, it's short-term.
Yeah.
When you act out of love, when you have a why that you're passionate about, a why that really is based in love, and you can see the picture. So I can see the wedding day. I can see what it would feel like to be there. I can feel what it would be like to be on the beach, you know, and to be proud of the body that I have. I can see what it'll be like to, you know, have a new circle of friends. I can see and experience what it would be like to be in that new job. I think that's the only way we can impact long-lasting change, is to focus on the why, and a why that's really, really personal, and a why that is based in love, love of self first and foremost. I love myself enough to do this. I love myself enough to go after this. And when you have a why that's based on love, I think it fuels that longer-lasting lifestyle change that we need.
Yeah. So, I mean, how do you advise people to start with this? Because sometimes, you know, everybody says, like, oh, I'm too busy. I'll get to do that next week. Or, you know, I'd love to think about, you know, 2 years' time, but I'm so focused on trying to get through the next month and pay bills. So how do you start this process? I mean, it just to, like, you know, sit down and try and figure these things out. If someone at home is saying, look, that sounds fantastic, I'd love to start putting this into practice. Like, what's the first step, do you think?
Yeah, for me, it's break the cycle first and foremost. So if you find you're in a cycle where you just, like you said, I don't have time, things are coming at me really, really quickly, and I'm going from week to week. There are times where you have to go day by day, week by week, but fundamentally there has to be where you break the cycle and you say, right, I need to take 15 minutes or I need to take a half a day and think of the bigger picture. Because what we don't repair, we repeat. So if we're happy to constantly stay in this short-term cycle where we're just focused on getting through the day, we never get to take our heads up. We never get to look at the bigger picture. So the starting point for me is create the macro or the big picture. What is the big picture? What is it about my life right now that's actually really nourishing me? So my friendship, my fun, my laughter. How do I bring that more into my life? And then what in my life right now is actually poisoning me? Maybe it's my work. Maybe it's the way I'm living, the way I'm eating, financial stress. What we don't repair, we repeat. If I don't change something, then in a year, 2 years' time, I'm going to be in the same position. Einstein said that the very definition of stupidity is repeating the same thing and expecting a different outcome. So for me, it starts with sitting down and creating what is the picture in 12 months' time that will be different. What is the lifestyle that I would like? What is the mindset that I would like to experience? What is the inner emotion that I'd like to be feeling? So for some people, it's time to change work, or it's time to travel more. It's time to get out of being financially under pressure all the time. So before you get into the micro goals or the little week-to-week stuff, you have to take your head up sometimes and say, right, what is the new reality that I'd like to create? And for some people, that's a vision board with pictures. For some, they like to write goals down. Sometimes we can use past pictures. So you could use images from your past life where you were at your best, where you were most invigorated, most excited, and take those pictures and say, right, that's, I'm going to bring in more of that back into my life. I'm bringing more of these people back into my life. The way I felt at that time in my life will become the way I'll feel about myself. So that's the first part. What is the big picture? And that feeds back into the why. Then when you have that big picture and you can see it every day, so put it somewhere that you see it when you wake up in the morning. Put it on your phone. Put it on your laptop. So every time you open your laptop, this new reality is in front of you. And it's pictures and it's words, and it's words like, you know, like, I am calm. I am confident. I am assertive. I am creating a new world where there is no stress. So for me, the more we start to fill the subconscious with this new reality and this new picture, and we start to bring it alive, is the more then that we can make daily decisions that are more in line with that picture. But I find sometimes we're making daily, weekly decisions about food, about life, about money, in the absence of that big picture. Mm-hmm. And we don't really know where we're going. we have no destination typed into the sat-nav. So the sat-nav is bringing us all over the city and we don't know if it's right or wrong. So that's the starting point. What is the life you'd like to have? Because the life you want, the life you're capable of and the life you deserve is absolutely waiting and ready for you. But you have to start turning up in a different way to energetically allow that life to appear.
Yeah. I think like one thing I've learned over the years and from conversations with you as well is that, you know, you have to have that bigger, longer term picture, but you can't get there tomorrow, right? So it's, you know, what can you do every day that leads you toward this? Because sometimes we think, okay, I don't like my job. I need to go out and get a new job next week. But what will happen is ultimately you'll end up in the same position in that other job. So it's about finding that, you know, 15 or 20 minutes every day outside. You know, everybody's really busy. But if you find half an hour to work on the macro goals, and then that starts to build, and then in 6 months' time, you've got 6 months of half an hour's behind you. And it's just like a snowball, right? So it just keeps gathering more and more as you grow. And I think that's something that I've learned. I think it's a way that you have to approach these things. You can't make a fundamental life change in a week. It's about building up the time and putting in the effort to get there.
Yeah, I think you're right. And the reason for that is that if people can imagine a triangle, and at the top of the triangle are your actions. So we all have actions every day, and those actions and decisions are what are keeping us in the life that we already have. But underneath our actions are our thoughts. So we now know that every thought drives our action. But underneath the thought is an emotion. So what are the emotions I'm feeling? If I'm in a stressed state, if I'm low on sleep, if I'm in a fearful state, that will drive fearful thoughts. That will drive fearful actions, short-term actions that are limbic brain-based or that are stress-based. And then finally, in the bottom of the triangle, so we've thoughts on top, we've thoughts driven by emotions, but underneath the emotions are beliefs. And to change your belief about yourself and what you are capable of, to change your belief about what success is, that takes time, Anthony. It can't be done overnight, because if you're 20 years old or 30 years old or you're like me, you have 40 years of a belief that has formed over 40 years. You can't just eradicate that. And it's very interesting, because all long-lasting behavioural change has to fundamentally be driven by a belief change. And the great analogy about beliefs, and sometimes we hold on to beliefs that might no longer serve us, or that actually might be holding us back, but we still hold on to them. And the analogy I use is somebody falls into the sea and they just find maybe a bit of a log, and the log is holding them up, it's keeping them safe, and they desperately grab onto this log. So they're praying and praying and praying that someone's going to come to save them. And then when the helicopter does come and the winchman goes down to collect them, believe it or not, the biggest problem the winchmen have is getting people to let go of the log. Because for that 12 hours, 24 hours or 36 hours, yes, it's short term. Yes, it's not perfect. And yes, you know there's better out there. But it's keeping you alive.
Yeah.
And for that 36 hours, you have learned that if you hold this log, you don't die. And the subconscious simply wants to keep you safe. So we have actions and behaviours, and we have beliefs in life that are like that log. They're very limiting, they're very short term, but as long as I hold on to this belief, I don't die.
Yeah.
So the winchman has the job of trying to convince the person, you need to let go. And most people say, but if I let go, I'll drown. Most of us have beliefs about, if I leave this job, I can't pay my mortgage. But the only way that makes sense is if you have no skill that's not relevant anywhere else. Because if you have a skill that's relevant somewhere else, you could leave this job. You could find another job. That other job will pay your salary, and it might even pay you more money than you've ever made before. So there are logs of beliefs that we're all desperately hanging on to. And my job as a psychologist, helping people take on new goals and change behaviour, is sometimes just getting them to let go of the belief they have about the world, their belief about the power of their mind, their belief about, oh, I'm an accountant, where else can I work? But maybe you're an artist, actually. And maybe you could write the greatest book that was ever written. Maybe you'll paint a picture that'll sell for $500,000. Why did you say you're an accountant? Well, that's what my dad did, and that's someone else's life. So that's the idea for me. It's when you set new goals, the why has to be powerful enough. to make you let go of beliefs that you've held for 20 years, 30 years, 40 years. When you see that picture, that new life, it has to inspire you to let everything go, because that's what you're doing all the time. And each form of new life is a bereavement. It's a letting go. In order for me to embrace a new way of being, a new way of thinking, a new way of living, a new job, a new body, a new exercise regime, I have to let go of something old. And sometimes we get caught because we don't want to let go. And if you imagine a baby, and I know you have a baby, so this is real for you, but if you imagine a baby being born regularly in our life as we go through lifestyle change, it's like a rebirth. Now, as we go through the birth canal, we start to panic because we start to hold on to old beliefs. And that's like the baby halfway through the birth canal just decided, no, I'm not going, I'm terrified.
I think some of them actually do that.
What?
Some of them actually
do. And they get, and that's what's happening sometimes in life. We get halfway through a change process and either we get tired or we get fearful or we get distracted. And when we do, we get pulled back into our old ways.
Yeah.
And we get pulled back into the habits and behaviours and the people that kept us in the old way of being, because they don't want to move either. And I know you want to mention a little piece about the people we surround ourselves with, but so lifestyle change, making effective behavioural change, setting new goals, embracing a new way of being fundamentally comes down to, am I willing to let go of my old beliefs about myself and about the world?
Yeah. Isn't that the ultimate problem or contradiction with our brain and our wiring, that it does so much to keep us safe, but in, as a result, it causes us so much emotional harm, you know? And it's fascinating, really. And the more I think we learn about the brain and how that works, we can overcome it and get rid of so much of that kind of turmoil of holding ourselves back with our beliefs and our thoughts.
And a very simple way of doing that very quickly is, you feed the brain change, and it's like you said, slowly. So if someone says, oh, I'd love to go for a run every morning, but I haven't ran in 5 years. Well, then the first thing you need to do is buy a pair of runners. So you have to get yourself ready. So buy a pair of runners, then put them beside the bed. Then for 5 mornings in a row, wake up, put the runners on, stand up, and then take the runners off, then go. After a few days, get up, then walk around the house in the runners, then get out and walk. And before you know it, after a week or two, now you're getting up. The first thing you're thinking about is putting on the runners. It just becomes automatic. You want to go for a walk, and then slowly the walk becomes a quicker walk, and then it becomes a run. So for me, habit building is where you attach a new habit to something you do already and you start to change it. So sometimes the rate of change can be slow enough that you don't know change is happening. And sometimes we have to fool the brain in.
Yeah.
To accepting the new change. So for me, it is about however big the goal is, what's the simplest? It's like me when I started to meditate every day. Meditating was the furthest thing I wanted to do. And I kept telling myself, I don't want to do this. So then I said, right, I have to listen to one song every morning. Just make the space to listen to a song. The next step was, as I listened to a song, I want to take 10 deep breaths through my belly. And then it became two songs and three songs. And then it was breathing. And then I realized that I wasn't even, the songs were playing, but I wasn't hearing them anymore. Now I wake up, my first reaction is to put my headphones on, but there's no music. And I spend 15 minutes in silence, breathing. But I've only got there because I took all those little steps to fool my brain into accepting change.
Yeah. So what are we actually doing there, just in terms of the physiology, you know, with the brain? Are we, you know, we're rewiring synapses, or what's actually going on there when we make these incremental habits and changes?
Yeah, it's exactly that. So your brain, if you imagine, is full of all these millions of billions of tiny little wires, and the wires are neurological pathways. So every time you think of something, every time you perform an act, you fire a pathway. So think of it now as a set of fairy lights or a set of lights. So every time I think or act in the same way, this pathway fires. Each time it fires, it gets wrapped in myelin. Myelin insulates it and it makes that pathway stronger. So the more I repeat it, the more it gets wrapped in myelin, so it becomes the bigger pathway. Then in a pressure situation, of course, the brain, or the neurological pathway that the brain is going to go to, is the biggest one. It's simply the one we've used more often. But here's where it gets interesting. If you reward your brain, if you reward your subconscious by giving it what it wanted, it will reward you with a beautiful shot of dopamine. And dopamine is a great neurotransmitter, but it can fool us. So, for instance, think of people in the morning when they, you know, take their first cup of coffee and they've had a really busy morning and they go in to a favourite coffee shop, they queue up, they get their favourite coffee and they take a sip. And just as they take the sip, how long, Anthony, does it take for them to say, oh, I needed that?
A couple of seconds, probably.
A couple of seconds. But how long does it take caffeine to hit your system?
Yeah.
So what you're getting there is a dopamine shot.
Yeah.
And you've probably paid $3 or $4.95 for a coffee, but you've actually paid $4.95 for a shot of your own dopamine. So dopamine, if we continue to live in a set of behaviours or think in a certain way that we've always done, it will reward you. Now, even though it might be a destructive way, so what we need to do is to start visualising, start thinking, start talking about our new behaviours, start to visualise it through our vision board. And when you start to see it, that starts to fire new neurological pathways. So habit change is about firing new neurological pathways, either through visualisation, first and foremost. You don't have to do it physically, but then slowly building in those new physical pathways. Because the only way you can start to behave in a new way is if you start to think and talk about it in a new way. So you have to think about and talk about the new behaviours to fire that pathway. So, and then even as I visualise that, that starts to wrap the new pathway in myelin. So there's those two things going on. Which brain pathway am I firing? And then what am I rewarding through dopamine?
Yeah.
And it's breaking that association between a certain activity and my dopamine. Once we can break that, then any behaviour, even the new behaviour, for me it was when I give up coffee and I switch it to hot water and lemon, my brain was craving dopamine and it didn't want to get it. It's not that it couldn't get it from hot water and lemon. It didn't want it because it didn't want change.
Yeah.
So as I was drinking the hot water and lemon, I could visualise cleansing my gut. I could visualise I'm going to be better in the gym now. Visualise my skin is going to be better. My eyes are going to be better. So I create a really powerful association between holding that glass of hot water and lemon and drinking it and the impact it was going to have. And very quickly then I started to get a release of dopamine. So now when I drink hot water and lemon, I have the exact same, it has the exact same impact on the coffee used to have. But I don't have any of the dangerous caffeine
or the
destructive caffeine elements that I had before. So
win-win.
It's win-win, yeah. And it's much cheaper.
Yeah. Okay. You talked about some of the practical stuff there, like, you know, a vision board. And as part of the KBC Well Good program, we have a journal, you know, on the back of the schedule where people can write stuff down and, you know, record their thoughts. So what would you like to see people starting to do, you know, when they start this program in terms of like practical things they can do?
Yeah. So for me, it's start with the macro goals. So on your calendar, if you could, you know, something sensory. So sensory is how we engage the amygdala, which is the fight or flight part of the brain. So the amygdala responds to smell. It responds to colours. So when we write down goals, sometimes we make the mistake of writing them down on a boring page in boring blue or black pen. So in your calendar, if you could create a vision board that has colours, photographs, images, powerful words, colours, and even if you could somehow make it smell, the more senses you engage in, the better. And also powerful affirmation statements, things like, I embrace change easily. I am in a process of cleansing my mind, my thoughts. I am becoming more confident. So it's not saying, oh, I'm super confident, but I am becoming more confident. So I think in our calendars or in the journals that we're creating, rather than just jumping into the goals and what I ate and what I did and what I thought this, we should have like a little journey that we go, page one, what are my personal values? I think that's really important. What are the values that I want to live and am I living them? After that, what is the life that I'm actively creating? And the affirmation statements, I am becoming more confident. I am becoming, you know, more resilient. My mind is clearing. There is less stress in my life. You have to write down those positive affirmation statements. And then what's the picture? Inspire yourself with that picture, because if you don't have that picture, you're like somebody, you know, trying to drive from Dublin to Cork, but you've no map, you've never been to Cork before, you haven't typed it into Google Maps, and I meet you and I tell you I'm going to Cork, and then you say, do you know the way, Jerry? I said, I don't actually. Have you a map? No. Do you want a map? No. Have you typed into Google Maps? No. Well, how are you going to get there? I'm just going to keep frantically driving around until I find it. So for me, you start with the why, you start with the end picture. So in your Well Good calendar, you know, create that space, those positive affirmations, that new picture. What are my personal values? Who is the person that I am becoming? And for me, that then, once I get through those few, first few pages, then it more easily allows me to make the decisions I need to make today to impact that. So what I say to people is, the more you see and visualize your best self, is the more you will make decisions based on that best self.
Yeah.
Once that best self goes out of our mind, once we lose sight of that bigger picture, then we start to make wrong mistakes. We make short-term decisions.
And Jerry, just for the KBC Wellgood program, it's 21 days, and you know, you can't, I think we agree, you know, you need to set a macro picture, but just for this program, should they maybe pick out a couple of smaller things that they can, you know, definitely achieve within the 21 days? Like, you know, okay, I'm going to do everything every day, or, you know, would you advise that that's a good tactic to approach this?
No, I think, you know, and the great thing about the Well Good challenge is that, you know, you have support now from with Philly and a physical, you know, we've yoga, we've meditation, we've me and my thoughts. So even to pick, if there's one change in each of those areas that I'd like to make, so maybe through myself and my podcast series, we'll look at what are the thoughts, you know, that I have. How can I, you know, become more confident? How can I find more space in my life? How can I change my language? And then look at Philly, you know, what is the one thing that I can start to build into my life? So with each area of the program, I would say even pick one thing. And what I do then is I have this little thing called CODE, C-O-D-E, Calendar of Daily Events. So what's one thing I can do every day to positively create a new mindset? What can I do every day to, you know, positively impact my physical well-being, my nutritional well-being, and then through the yoga aspect of it, that union, because yoga is union. How do I bring this together? So on my mat while I'm doing my yoga practice, can I think of what Jerry said about being mindful, about self-compassion? Can I think about what Philly is doing about posture and using my own body as movement and flexibility? The yoga part of the program is a real good way of bringing it all together. So set one simple goal in each area, and then each day do one little thing that impacts each area, so that we don't become, well, I'm super at one area and then I've left the others down. And the single biggest part from the psychology side is, start to change your beliefs. Start to change the words you use about yourself. Start to change the things you allow yourself to talk about. Start to focus on the things that you can control, and start to talk about your new reality. So if by the end of the 21 days you've achieved nothing else except you now have a macro picture, you now use different language, you now regularly find 10, 15 minutes to find space, you have simple routines around sleep, you have simple routines about how I wake up in the morning. As simple as they sound, they're the key to changing everything.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Well, Jerry, thanks a million for that. I really enjoyed the conversation, and thanks everyone for tuning in on the first podcast in the series. Please make sure to send us your thoughts on social media for the whole Well Good challenge. We're going to be using the hashtag KBC Well Good. So please feel free to get involved and join the conversation and post, most importantly, you know, things that you're doing, like show us your, you know, your vision boards and your calendars filled out and everything you're going to do. We'd love to see them. Jerry, I understand you're going to be doing a lot more podcasts before the end of it, and you've got some really great guests lined up.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I hope they're going to be good. I'm excited by them. I'm excited by, we've Jason Quigley in, and we'll be talking about sleep, fostering a sense of calm. And what we're trying to do is, you know, be real practical. So we look at, you know, how do I foster a sense of calm? How do I build better sleep practices? You know, what is the science behind sleep? So it's very simple, practical stuff that we can apply every day in our life. So I'm really looking forward to a great series and some great guests, and I believe you're going to be joining me for some of them again and put me in the hot seat, so don't go too hard on me.
I'll be back, yeah.
But looking forward to having some fun as well as we do it.
Great. Okay, we'll leave it there. Thanks, Jerry.
Great. Thanks, Anthony.